Okay, we're beginning here on the middle of Ayin Bet Amud Aleph by the Tashma, 13 lines down. Gemara here is continuing to discuss the question that was raised in yesterday's daf, which is Ibailuhu. Gerushin Kishtika Damyo? Is divorce the equivalent of silence? Oke Hakama Damyo? Or is it the equivalent of being making the neder? Now, when we looked at this yesterday, the Gemara explained what the nafkamina is between these two shitot, because in of itself, it makes no difference because the husband's no longer in the picture now. And therefore, by definition, the neder should be chal on the woman. But the question really arises in the case where girsha, he divorces her, bahadra biyomei, on that same day, he takes her back as a wife. In that instance, if we say that girushin is kehakama dami, then the whole process is over because he was already making the neder. Once he's making the neder, there's nothing to discuss. And when he remarries her, then there's no issue at all. On the other hand, if you believe that gerushin is kishtika damyo, we spoke about yesterday that shtika is acquiescence only when the time has elapsed in which he can be made for the neder. So if he goes beyond biyom shamo on the day that he hears it, then shtika will be the equivalent of hakama. But over here where he remarries her later in that day and then decides to be made for the neder, then he could unwind the shtika that happened before if the gerushin is deemed to be shtika. So that was the question of the Gemara. The Gemara first attempted to bring an answer from the Diyuk out of the Tosefta that we quoted. And then the Gemara rejected that because the Tosefta was inconclusive. The Tosefta and the Reisha gives you one Diyuk and the Sefer gives you an alternate Diyuk. And based on that, the Gemara felt that it wasn't conclusive enough for us to depend on that Tosefta for our understanding of what Girushin is. Now the Gemara tries again and says, Tashma, Nadra Vihi Arusa. She takes a neder, and she's an arusa. Vinit garsha. Then she gets divorced. Vinit arsa bo bayom. And then she gets remarried on that same day. Afilu lemeya, even 100 times. Avia ubala acharon mefirin nidareha. Her father and the last one that she is engaged to halachically are able to be made for the nidarim. So this is our Mishnah. And in our Mishnah, it seems that we have exactly the scenario that we're looking for. We have a woman who is an arusa, who got married, then gets divorced, and then gets remarried numerous times. And in the end, we still say that avia ubala acharon mefirin nidera. So you see here that they have the ability to be made from the neder, even after she's gone through gerushin. Shmamina, gerushin kishtika damu. From that, you would conclude that gerushin are the equivalent of shtika, the equivalent of silence, because even after the divorce, we still allow the neder to be mufar, Ayudei, the Av, and the Arusa Acharon. De'ike Hakama Domo, if you really thought that Gerushin are the equivalent to Hakama, mi matze made for Arusa Acharon, then how could the Arusa Acharon be made for the Neder if the Arusa Rishon already was Mikhaim the Neder? The power invested in the Arusa Acharon all derives from the Arusa Rishon. And the fact that the Arusa Rishon is already making the Neder, that leaves the Arusa Acharon with nothing to do. Because mi matze made for Arusa Acharon nidrei, the Ukim Arus Rishon. How could it be that the Arus Acharon could be made for Nidarim, that the Arus Rishon already was Mikayim? Again, because the Arus Acharon derives all of his power, his rights, from the Arus Rishon. So Gemara says, that's not a problem. Machabai Skinan. Case here is Bidalo Shama Arus Rishon. It was a case where the Arus Rishon never heard about the Neder, and therefore he was never in the picture in terms of being making the Neder. Mar says, if that's the case, Mayiria Bobayom. Why does it have to be on that day? It could be even Afilu Achar Me'ah Yamim Nami. Even 100 days later, it could be the case. So now, this goes back to what we discussed yesterday in the Mishnah. The fact that the Mishnah demands Bobayom means that somebody heard something. Because Bobayom is only relevant Biyom Shamo, on the day that they heard it. So when we learned the Mishnah, we said there are two possibilities. One possibility is that the Baal heard about it. And the other possibility is that the Av heard about it, that the father heard about it. The lesser of those two chidushim is that the father heard about it. Because then we could say that since the Arus HaRishon never heard about it, then the Arus HaCharon, when he does hear about it, is granted the right to be made for the neder. On the other hand, if you believe that the Arus HaRishon heard it, then it's even a bigger chiddush that even though the Arus HaRishon heard the neder, nevertheless, he still grants that right to the Arus HaCharon and allows them to be made for the neder. So we had the memra of Shmuel, which we saw in yesterday's daf, and the memra of Shmuel, the Masorah that Shmuel had, was that the Bo Bayom in our Mishnah is because the Baal had heard about it. And it was a case that Nir'ul the Baal, that the Baal had heard about it. Now we have here a suggestion by the Gemara that that's not the case. Bo Bayom in the Mishnah is not being driven by the fact that it was heard by the Arus, but rather it was heard by the Av. And that's what the Gemara says over here. So if you think that the Arus didn't hear about it, my area Bo Bayom, then why is Bo Bayom relevant in the Mishnah? Even after 100 days, it would still be relevant. Kishelo Shama Arus Vishama Av. That's not a problem. The case in the Mishnah, the case with the Arus, didn't hear about it, and the Av did hear about it. The Bo Bayom, who the Matzi Mayfair, that the father only has the ability to be Mayfair on that day. But beyond that point, he would not be able to be Mayfair. Now that goes to the different Shito than the Rishonim. According to the Rambam, who says that when you have the Baal and the Av, and in their scenario like this, they have to be Mayfair on the same day, that's exactly what the Gemara is saying over here. Since the Av heard about on that day, therefore, the Arus is also bound by that fact, and he has to be Mayfair on that day. So the hearing of the father has the same effect as the hearing of the Baal, because it drives both of them to have to be Mayfair the Neder on that single day. According to most of the other Rishonim, the need or necessity to be Mayfair the Neder is driven by Yom Shamo on the day that you hear it. So therefore, if the father heard on this day, that would be Yom Shamo for him. The Arus hears on another day, that would be the Yom Shamo for him, and he'd be Mayfair on that day. But then, what is the Gemara suggesting over here? That the father, that fact that the father heard it on that day, why does that affect the Arus? Especially since we know now, based on what the Gemara is explaining, that the Arus never heard about the Neder. So why is the Arus bound by the hearing of the Av? The answer to that might be because of the necessity here for both the Av and the Arus to be made for the Neder. An Arus only has the right to be made for what we call Bekodmin, with Nidarim that preceded his Erusin together with the father. And therefore, really, in terms of the Arus HaAcharon, his ability to be made for the Neder is only in conjunction with the father in this instance. So therefore, since the father is bound by that day, because it's B'Yom Shamo for the father, if we waited 100 days from now, then even though for the Arus HaAcharon, that would be B'Yom Shamo for him, and he could be made for that day, the father's ability to be made for is already expired. And since we need both of them, the conjunction of their hafarot is what drives the hafarat and neder here, we will be bound by the limitation of the father. And since the father heard about it, he's limited to today. If the Arus HaAcharon doesn't hear about it today and is made for it on another day, then we never get avia v'Arus HaAcharon being made for the neder. And that's why it fails here according to those other Rishonim. Because he needs it to be in conjunction with the father, we need it to be on the same day as the father. And that's why it's driving it over here. Not that that's a steadfast rule, like the Rambam thinks it's a steadfast rule. They always have to do it on the same day. Otherwise, it doesn't work. So they would have to be making known to each other. Or if they don't hear it on the same day, then it just won't work. But according to the other Rishonim who don't think it's a steadfast rule, in this case, it is the rule because of the nature of the demand that it be the Avia and the Arus HaAcharon. We demand the Arus HaAcharon to do his Hafaran the same day as the father. And since the father is on a clock already, we need the Arus HaAcharon to work within that clock of the father. Down from this, we would have concluded Gerushin was the equivalent of silence. The Gemara rejected that and said no, because maybe the case in our Mishnah is a case of Shema Av and not Shema Habal. Therefore, we have no proof from the case in our Mishnah. Tashma. So let's say from this case, Nadra Bo Bayom, Girsha. She took a neder on that day and then divorced her. Vechzira Bo Bayom. And then he returned her on that same day. So the husband who divorced her now remarries her on that same day. Ein yochol afer. He's not able to be mayfair the neder. Shma mina. From this you would conclude, gerushin ka'akamadamu. The reason that he can't be mayfair the neder when he takes her back is because after he divorced her the first time, that was equivalent of hakamata neder. Since he already did hakamata neder, when he marries her the second time, there's nothing that he can do about it because the neder was kfar hukam. Even though, if you look in the Mishnah on Peitet Amar Aleph, it's obvious that this case is a case of Nisuah, you have to explain that the Havamin of the Gemara was that this type of Nisuah, where he remarries the woman, would be equivalent or similar to an Arusah, and that's why the questioner brought this as a possible proof to the fact that Gerushin is Kehakama Damya. So Gemara says, Amrei Hocha B'Nisuah Askinan. Let us say here that we're talking about a case of Nisuah. So we know that there's a difference between an Arus and a Nisua. An Arus is able to be made for Nidarim Bekodmim. He's able to be made for a Neder, even for things that came prior to his entering into being an Arus. Then someone who's a Nisua, once he marries her and has consummated the marriage through Nisuin, then that instance, the husband has no rights to be made for what Kodmim. with Nedarim that preceded the Nisuin is a cutoff point because she becomes independent at that point in time. Now, as the Ran explains why that is the case over here, is because the reason that the Arus has the ability to be made for in Kodmin is not because he's any greater than the Baal. That doesn't make any sense. If the husband, who is a Nasui, who is fully married to her, doesn't have the right, then why should the Arus have that right? The Arus is less connection to the woman. Why should he be granted the right to be made for Nedarim that preceded him? And the Nasui does not have that right. The difference between Nisua and an Arusa is the fact that the father is involved. What grants the right to the Arus to be Mefer B'Kodmin is the partnership with the father. Since the father had a right that preceded the existence of this Arusin, then with the Arus himself, he's able to be Mefer the Neder, not because he's more powerful than a Baal who's married fully, but because he needs the father. And the father is what grants him the connection or the bridge to the Hafarot of the Nidarin that came prior to the Arusin. And then once she's Nasui, she severed all contact with the father. And in severing all contact with the father, it also severs her ability to be Mefer B'Kodmin. So that's the first thing we need to understand. The difference between Nisua and Arusa generates this answer here, which is, Amar Yochum Nisua Skinan. Behind the time of Daniel Chola Afer, and why can't he be Mefer here? Mishum Deina Baal Muf Mefer B'Kodmin. Because a husband cannot be Mefer in things that preceded the Nisuin. Again, we explained why that is the case here. Now, Rashi explains the case here is Kigon Shinasa, that he was fully married at first. He had a Nisuin that was a consummated marriage, Vinadra, and then she took a Neder, Vigirsha, Bayom Shishama. And he divorces on the day that he hears about the Neder, Vechzira Bo Bayom. And then he returns on that day with a Rusin. When he returns and remarries her, it's the equivalent of her marrying someone else. Dachshav hein kodmin, because now they're deemed to be kodmin. That is because when they got married the first time and they consummated the marriage, she severed her relationship with her father and became completely independent. So now that she's completely independent after the divorce, and then he becomes an arus to her, that arus has no rights in the kodmin. He doesn't have any rights in the kodmin because the father is not in the picture anymore. Since the father's not in the picture because she became independent from the first nisuim, that's what severs the husband's ability to be made for the neder after he's already divorced her. So that's one explanation. That's the way the Rashi explains it. If you look in the Rosh over here says, Shechzira v'nas'a. He says that the case is just the opposite. It's a case where he had a rusin with her the first time, divorced her, and then had nisuin. And what's the failure over here? The failure over here is nisuin. Had he been erased to her, if he had just gotten luckily engaged to her again, he would have been able to be made for the Nidarim because the father would have still been in the picture. But after Erusin, he divorces her. Now he enters into Nisuin. When he enters into Nisuin, that cuts off, severs anything that happened prior to that point in time. And since it severs anything that happened prior to that point in time, it is the equivalent of starting anew or starting afresh, and therefore he has no rights to be made for B'Kodmin. So therefore, even though he was an Arus before, but now that he's entered into Nisuin, that Nisuin now prevents him from going back and dealing with the Nidarim that she made when he was an Arus, because the father is now out of the picture and Kodmin are now out of the picture. The Ran actually says that both are true, that both are right. Rashi and the Rosh are right. Then in either instance, it would cause a problem. Now, there are those that suggest that when we say that Eina Baal Mefer B'Kodmin, that's only true for Nidarim that took place prior to his Erusin with her. But if he already had Erusin with her, and then the Neder took place while they were the Erusin, and then he took her as a wife and consummated the marriage, he felt that the Baal, the husband's rights, should not be any worse rights of the Arus. But as we explained, that the Ran says over here, that there's a difference between those cases, because the rights of the Arus are really derived from the father, and don't derive from him himself. And therefore there is a change. Once you move into the Nisuin, then he does lose certain rights in the Nedarim. But over here, those Achronim suggest that if the Neder was taken while they were Arusin, then the Arus's right to be made for that Neder is not coming from the father, it's coming from himself. And since it's coming from himself, therefore if he consummates the marriage afterwards, he would still have that right to be made for the Neder. So there are those that believe, I think that the Rashash over here believes that that's the case, that even after marriage, if the neder only took place while they were be'erusin, then the husband would retain the right. So So the case that we're speaking about here, according to him, is a case where the nether preceded the Erusin, and then while he was an Erus, he would have a right to be made for the nether because of the father's being a joint party to it. And then, obviously, when it reaches Nisuin, the father's out of the picture, so he no longer has a right to be made for Bikodmin. So that would have to be the explanation according to that Shita that says if the nether was taken while he was an Erus, then he would still have the right to do it when he is a Nasui. Now, in terms of the conclusion of the Gemara, once again, in the Darim, we're faced with an inconclusive Gemara. The Gemara never answers whether Gerushin is Kishtika Damu or Gerushin is Kehakama Damu. So the Ramban says, well, what are the rules with regards to Psak here? We're dealing with a Iser Doraita of Nidarim, and therefore if we have an inconclusive Gemara, we're going to go to Chumrah. The Chumrah would mean that Gerushin is the equivalent of Hakama, and that's why the Ramban paskins that Gerushin is Hakama Damyo, because it's a fake Doraita of Chumrah. On the other hand, the Rashba says that that's not the case. The Ran over here quotes the Rashba, and the Rashba says that even though there's no conclusive evidence in our Gemara over here, there was conclusive evidence in the Gemara from yesterday. Yesterday, Shmuel had a Mesorah from his Rebbeim that our Mishnah was talking about. He had a case where the Baal heard about it. Now, our Gemara over here suggests that there's no proof from our Mishnah because the Baal didn't hear about it. It was the Av who heard about it. But Shmuel, who's an Amora, does have a Mesorah from his Rebbeim that suggests that the Mishnah was speaking about a case where the Baal did hear about it. Now, if the Baal did hear about it, then our Mishnah is a proof that Gerushin is Kishtika Damu. Because if the Baal heard about it, and then he got divorced from this woman, and then she married whether one person or many other people afterwards on that same day, they are still allowed to be made for the nether, the Arus Acharon and the father, and that means that the Gerushin did not get in the way. And if that's the case, then we have a conclusion from Shmuel's statement. So now you have to ask the question, why did the Gemara leave it inconclusive if Shmuel is a proof? So here the Rashba says something that we mentioned back on Daf Lamed Hey Amud Bet with regards to whether Kohanim are the Shluchim of Hashem, Shluchei Derachmanoninu, or are they Shluchei Yedidan, are they our Shluchim, are they our proxies? Over here in the Gemara Nidarim, the Gemara is inconclusive. Yet the Gemara in Kiddushin has a conclusion. The Gemara in Kiddushin says, well, if you can't do it yourself, then the Kohanim can't be your proxy. Since Israel can't do the Avodah, then it's clear the Kohanim are not our proxies. And it must be that the Kohanim are Shluchei Derachmona. So all the Rishonim ask back on Daf Lamed Hayam would bet, why didn't our Gemara bring that proof from Rav Huna in the Gemara in Kiddushin? So the way that the Rashba answered that question over there, and the Rabbi Kiv Eger tells you on Daf Lamed Hayam would bet to look at the Ran over here on Ayin Bet Amud Aleph, because he quotes the Rashba that says this, is that the Gemara over there in the Darim was not looking for an answer to the question. It was looking for a Tanaic support or Tanaic answer to the question. We know we have an Amora who's telling us what the answer is. That's Rav Huna. But what the Gemara in the Darim was looking for was a Mishnah or a Braita that could give us the answer to that question. And that's why the Gemara ends inconclusively, because the Gemara couldn't find a Mishnah and a Braita. The Rashba says the same thing is true here. The Gemara has an answer from Shmuel. But what the Gemara is in search of right now is finding a Braita or a Mishnah that tells us that information. But now the Gemara couldn't find that. Well, once the Gemara can't find that, yes, it's inconclusive at the Tanaic level. But with regards to the Amora, Shmuel tells us what the Loch is, and therefore we'll pass on like Shmuel. And therefore the Rashba disagrees with the Ramban and says that the Gemara is conclusive over here, and Shmuel tells us the Loch, that Gerushin is Kishtika Damu, because Shmuel tells us that he has a Mesorah, that was the case in our Mishnah. Okay. Now we move on to the next Mishnah. So the next Mishnah says, Derech Talmidei Chachamim. This is the way of Talmidei Chachamim. Now when we're talking about the way of Talmidei Chachamim, it's the equivalent of the difference between reactive medicine and proactive medicine or preventative medicine, which is that halacha deals with situations in which something's already happened, and then it's prescriptive of what to do when something has happened. That's true with regards to the Hafarat HaNeder. That's true with dealing with these issues of Nidarim. On the other hand, the derech of the Talmidei Chachamim is to preempt that and to do something that's preventative in nature and to try to solve the problem before it arises. And so therefore, the Mishnah tells you here that the derech of Talmidei Chachamim, ad shelo hayta bito yotza meitzlo, before his daughter leaves his possession to get married, to reach Nisuin, omer la, he says to her, kol Nidarim shenadart betoch beiti, any nether that you took while you were in my house, harihein mufarin, they are null and void. So what the father does is he basically cleans the slate before this woman enters into Nisuin, what he's going to lose any rights to be Mefin and Darim. So at that point, he takes a blanket hafara, and he says that any nether that you took while you were under my auspices is null and void. Okay, so that's a question the Gemara is going to deal with in a second. It's unclear from the Mishnah whether the father heard about the nether or didn't hear about the nether, and therefore the Gemara is going to ask that question. Maybe you don't need hearing in order to be made for the nether. V'chein abau, the same is true with the husband. Achlo tikanes l'rishuto, before he performs nisuin, omerla kol nedarim shenadart, achlo tikansi l'rishuti, all nedarim that you took before you entered into my possession before nisuin, harhen mufarin. They are null and void, tikanes l'rishuto en echol afer. Because once he marries and has the nisuin, we just saw the last line in the previous Gemara is that ain't abau may fear b'kod min. That the husband in nisuin can't be made for things that preceded the marriage. So in order to clean the slate before they enter into the marriage, what they do is the father and the husband both give these blanket hafarot. They do a complete null and void on any nether that she's taken beforehand. And therefore they jointly now can be made for all of her nedarim before she enters into nisuin and clear the slate. So now the question is, Boi Rami Bar Chama, Baal, Mao Shefer Belo Shmia. The husband, can he be made for a nether without ever hearing the nether? First of all, the Ran points out that the question is not just about the Baal. It's not about the husband alone. That's just an example. It's true of the Av, and it's true of an Arus. It's true of any person. Do they need to hear the nether in order to nullify the nether? And that's the basic question of the Gemara over here. Do you have the ability to be made for a nether without hearing about it? Now here again, hearing is not a absolute necessity. You don't have to physically hear the nether. You just need to know about the nether. The question is not about physically hearing it. It's just knowing about it. Shmia here doesn't mean literally actual hearing. It means that you have to have knowledge of the nether. And that's the question of the Gemara here. Do you need knowledge of the nether or not? Now, there are Rishonim like the Rambam who take this seriously and think that it's only by the Baal that the question is being asked over here. And therefore, he might have a different conclusion about the Baal than other players. On the other hand, the Ran and many of the other Rishonim believe that this question is a generic question about anybody who's being made for a nether. Do they have to know about the nether in order to be made for the nether? So the Gemara says, V'shama Isha Dafkahu. When it says that the husband heard about it, is that Dafka? Oh, Lav Dafkahu. Or is it not literally that he has to hear about it? That's just the normal course. I mean, that the Torah spoke about a normal situation in which the Baal hears about it, or the father hears about it, and he wants to be made for the nether. But the same would be true even if they didn't hear about it. Now, the word Isha, by the way, is very important over here. It's Isha with a Mapik He. Numerous Mapik He's in the beginning of the Parshat Matot, where the parak about Hafarat Nedarim, Nedarim is found. And over there, those Mapik He's actually have a significant impact on the meaning of the word. It's one of the few places in the Torah that if you don't pronounce the Mapike, you're actually changing the meaning of the Pasuk, and it probably have to correct the Baal Korah in that instance because it really does change the meaning and change the next significantly. The word Isha with a Mapike is Ish Shala, means her husband. On the other hand, Isha without a Mapike means the woman. So Vishama Isha with a Mapike means that her husband heard about it. Ish Shala heard about it. On the other hand, if you just read Vishama Isha, it means to sound like the woman heard, which is incorrect. And that is true for the remainder of this daf, and it's true of that whole parsha over there, that the mapike is almost essential to the meaning of most of the psukim over there. And the word isha, especially, is with the mapike, meaning ishela. So, v'shama isha, does that mean that the husband heard about it literally, he knows about it? Or is it just that's the normal thing that happens, and even if he didn't hear about it, didn't know about it, he still would have the ability to be made for the nidarim? Tashma. So let's bring a proof from our Mishnah. Derech Talmidei Chachamim, Achelo Yatzat Bito Mi Etzlo, before his daughter leaves his possession, his auspices, Omer La, Kol Nedarim Shenadart B'toch Beiti, Arein Mufarin. He nullifies all those Nedarim. V'alo Shama. How could he do that? He didn't hear any of the Nedarim. So how could that be the case? How is he made for the Nedarim? Must be. The conclusion is that you do not need to know about the Nedarim in order to be made for the Nedarim. Gemara says, V'chi Shama, Hu D'meifar. No, when he hears about them, then he's made for the nedarim. Im kain, kilo shema, lama lele meimar. So then, why is he making this statement at all? Why is this Talmid Chacham over here all of a sudden entering into this statement and saying, listen, any nidarim you took while you were under my auspices, the father is saying to the daughter, they are mufarin. Well, that statement has no impact whatsoever, because that statement only matters l'chishama, then when he hears it. So the Gemara says, you know what? That's right. He's only being made from the nidarim when he hears about them. Well, if he only is made from the nidarim when he hears about them, then what is the whole point of this statement? Hakamashvalan, it's coming to teach you, urche de tzura midrabanan, way there, the proper etiquette for a Talmud Chacham or a young Talmud Chacham is la dure, is to investigate, to pry, the way that Rashi says it over here is, lachzor v'livdok achar bito. He takes an investigation, looks into his daughter's matters, to see if she has a nidarim. He engages her in a conversation, shelo tavo lidei michshol, so that she won't end up having a michshol, having a problem with nidarim. So basically, it's an excuse to enter into a conversation with the daughter in order to prompt her to see if there are any nidarim that she needs to know about and which she can be made fair. And the Ran says something very similar to Rashi, that it's just a way to engage in a conversation. So now the Gemara's conclusion over here is that l'chi shama, only when he hears about them is he able to be made for the nidarim. Tashma miseifa. What about the latter half of our Mishnah? V'chein abal. Same is true of the husband. Ad shelo tikanes l'rshuto, before he consummates the marriage, Omerlah. Then he says to her, listen, all nidarim that you took prior to this point in time are mufarin. Hachanami, the Amarlah, this is a similar case where he says to her, l'chishamano, when I hear about them. Now, there is a question about the girsa over here. The question as to whether the girsa is l'chishama or l'chishamano. Now, even those that think that the girsa is l'chishamano over here, the Ran says that they believe that the girsa beforehand by the father is l'chishama. And the difference between those two girsahot is whether the neder takes effect only when he hears it, l'chishama, this way the Ran says it, kishishma achar kach nidarim shenadra, when he hears of the nidarim afterwards that she took, choseru mefer utan, then he goes back and is mefer them and annuls those nidarim. On the other hand, l'chishamano means that the maise hafara is taking place right now. The chaluta farah is when the chishamana, when I hear about them. So the difference between the lishonot is substantial, which is the chishama means that when I hear about it, then I will engage in hafarat haneder at that point in time. I will then be made for the neder then, and he has to be choser, and he has to do the hafarah when he hears about it. On the other hand, the lashon of the chishamana is that I have set the process in motion today, that when I do hear about it in the future, that will generate the chalut hafara. So the maisa hafara is taking place right now. The chalut hafara is going to be taking place in the future with the chishamana, when I hear about it. And the Tosfot is clear here that the way that you have to say it is, batel laichi l'chishamano, that these nidarim are batel. He can't just say batel, that they are batel, or they're that I'm doing hafara. He has to say that I'm doing the hafara, the chishamana. When I hear about them, then the hafara will go into effect. So basically what they've done is separated between the maseh hafara, which is taking place now, and the chaluta hafara, which takes place when he hears it. That will depend on which lashon you use. If you have the word l'chishama, that means that only when you hear about it are you able to engage in the hafara, and you have to do the hafara then. If you say l'chishamana is the girsa, that means that you're able to engage in the hafara now, with it taking effect later on when you hear about it. And that will be the difference in the girsa. So the Ran says that there were two different girsa out over here. One of them was l'chishama all the way through. The other girsa was l'chishama in that first case and l'chishamana in the residual cases. That obviously raises the question, why by the father is the girsa according to everybody l'chishama versus by the other cases that we're going to bring here, all the cases we're going to bring here, the girsa is l'chishamana. So the Ran explains the difference as being that the father's position is being severed completely. The father has come to the end of his line in terms of his auspices over his daughter, his right or ability to be made for the nidarim of his daughter. So now, if he says today, listen, when I'm putting the maaseh hafara in place today, and it'll be chal in the future when I hear about it. Well, the problem is when he hears about it in the future, he no longer is a relevant party anymore. His rights have been severed at the point of nisuin, and he no longer is a party or has auspices over his daughter. And if that's the case, when he hears about it, it has no relevance. You can't have the chalut, hafara, take place at a point in time when he is not relevant to the nidarim. On the other hand, for the husband, the husband here is made for the neder while he's in Arus. And he says, when I hear about it, then this will go into effect. The Maisa Fara that I did now will be Chal when I hear about it. Now, when he hears about it later on after Nisuin, she's still under his auspices. He's her husband. And he's still her husband. And he still has rights over her. Now, he may not have rights to the Kodmin, but that he solves by putting the Maisa Hafara in place prior to the Nisuin. But the Chalut Hafara can take place while they're married because he still is a relevant party to this woman. And therefore, the Ran explains that's the difference between the case of the father and everybody else. The case of the father is because the father is taken out of the picture completely at that point in time. And that's why the Lashon, according to everyone, is L'chishama over there. On the other hand, according to the Girsaot that change it, then they say L'chishamana starts from after the father. In that case, you can have a Hafara, a Maisa Hafara take place at one point, and the Chalut Hafara take place at a later time. So that is the machloket here as to whether L'chishama goes through the entire sugya, or L'chishamana goes through the entire sugya. Now, there is another view here of how it works, and that is a machloket between the Rosh and the Ran as how this works. The Ran says over here that when he hears about it, came into sof lochela hafara achishama bal. He says that the hafara only takes effect when the husband hears about it. So what the Ran thinks happens is that you make the hafara today, and then when you hear about it, that's when it goes effective. That's the chalut hafara takes place when you hear about it. But prospectively, it takes effect. On the other hand, the Rosh writes, it's on the Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, it's three lines down, and the Ran brings it as an alternate explanation as to why the Baal, after the Nisuin, still has the ability to be Mefer the Nidarim, even though the Av is out of the picture. He says that it actually works Lemafreya retroactively. The Maisa Afara is now, and then he's conditioning it on the Shmiah later on. And when he hears it later on, that Shmiah now triggers the Maisa Afara that was done beforehand, and retroactively now it becomes effective. Now, based on that, you would ask the Rosh and the Ran's difference in their opinion might derive from the fact that maybe the Ran had a Girs of L'chishama and the Rosh had a Girs of L'chishamano, and therefore he believes that it works retroactively. But then you have to explain why that is, and that might be have to do with the nature of the difference in the way that they view Shmiah in Hafarat Nidarim. You can view Shmiah in Hafarat Nidarim. The Rav Soloveitchik in the Rishimot Shiurim mentions this, that you could view Shmiah or the necessity for Shmiah as being integral to the Hafara, or you could view the Shmiah simply being a Tnai, a condition of the Hafara. If you view it as being integral to the Hafara, then the Hafara can only take effect once the Shmiah comes into the picture. Without the Shmiah, there's no way that you can make the nether effective. On the other hand, if you say that the Shmiah is simply a Tnai, a condition in the Hafara, then the Hafara could be effective today, just waiting for the condition to be fulfilled, which is the Shmiah comes into place. And that would actually explain the difference here between the Rosh and the Ran. The Rosh believes that Shmiah is simply a Tnai, a condition of the Hafara, and therefore the Hafara retroactively takes effect. From the time that you said the Hafara, it will take effect. You're just waiting for the Tnai. What's that condition? When I hear about it. Once that condition is fulfilled, then the Hafara goes into effect retroactively. On the other hand, the Ran believes that the Shmiah is so integral to the Hafara that the Hafara can't go into effect until the Shmiah is there. And therefore, he believes that only prospectively can you have Hafarat HaNeder, because once the Shmiah comes into place, that's the moment when the Hafara goes into effect or can go into effect. So you would have to explain their opinions based on that. So just to review their opinions, the Ran over here explains the reason, the need for Shmiah is because the Baal needs to know whether the nether is relevant to him, or that Hafarat HaNeder can't take place bisafek. You must know what you are being mefer. Now, that means that the Shmiah is integral to the Baalut, in a sense, the ownership over this nether, or the rights granted to this individual to be mefer the nether. And therefore, the Ran says that when it comes to the Hafarat HaNeder, the Shmiat HaBaal, in a sense, is Me'akev. And since the Shmiat HaBaal is Me'akev, because he needs to know that he's being made for a nether that's relevant to him, and his relevance to the nether is only generated through the Shmiah, that Shmiah is so integral to the Hafara, that when you say the Maaseh Hafara, the Chalut Hafara can only take place when the Shmiah comes about. because the Shmiya is so integral to the nether and his rights and his connection to that nether, therefore he can only be made for the nether prospectively once there's a chalut, once it goes into effect, his Shmiya. And we're going to see later on, according to the Ran, the Baal cannot create a shliach to do the hafarah for him because the Shmiya Baal is so integral to the hafarah itself. On the other hand, the Rosh believes that the Shmiya allows the hafarah to take place retroactively, and the Shmiya itself just allows the effectiveness of the hafarah to take place when he originally did the Maise hafarah, when he said the hafarah. That's why he says it's retroactive. And therefore, it seems that the Rosh believes that Shmiya is only at tonight. It's a condition in order to allow the hafarah to go through. It's not integral to the hafarah, but simply a condition in the hafarah. Once you fulfill the condition, then the hafarah goes into effect. When was that effectiveness? When you did, when you said the hafarah. So the Shmiya is simply a condition to reach the point of hafarah. And based on that, therefore the Rosh will say later on that technically, it seems like the Baal could create a shliach for the Shmiya, but there's a failure in the fact that Shmiya is not subject to shlichut, and that's the way that the Rosh explains it later on with regards to shlichut. So how integral you think the Shmiya is to the Chalut HaHafarah will have two impacts over here. One impact is, when does the HaFarah go effective? Is it only at the time of the Shmiya, or is it from the time that you did the HaFarah, you said the HaFarah? And number two is, whether you can create a Shliach to do the Shmiya for you. And the Ran says no. And the Rosh says, yes, you could create a shliach, but there's a failure on another level, which is Shmiya is not just not subject to shlichut. But had it been subject to shlichut, you would have been able to create a proxy because it's simply a tnai. It's not an integral part of the definition of the hafarah. Now, the broader question, which is really lurking in the background, is what is the connection between the hafarah and the hakama? How closely related are those two items? Because the option for the husband is to be making the neder or to be made for the neder. Do we see hafarah as being the opposite of hakama? Therefore, only where he knows the information can he do hakamat neder. The same will be true by hafarat neder. The information for the Baal is integral to his ability to do hafarah. Or hakama and hafarah running on different tracks. That hakama has its own track, and the necessity for knowledge by hakama is because the nature of hakama is that the person needs to know. Hafarah, which is the unwinding or dismantling of something, requires less knowledge or less understanding. All right, so now the Gemara continues and says, Tashma, Omer lishto kol nedarim shetaduri ad shavo mimakom ploni harin kayamin. A person, it's a Mishnah, an upcoming Mishnah on Daf Ayin Hey, where if a person says to his wife, any nether that you are going to take until I come from such and such a place, harin kayamin, I am mikayim those nedarim, lo amar klum, he has said nothing. He is not successful at being mikayim nedarim. Rashi over here says, "Dadayin lo baha neder leolam." The problem is that the neder doesn't exist. You can't be mikayim something that doesn't exist, and therefore the failure over here is if the kiyum is because there's no neder to be mikayim. That's the way Rashi phrases it. On the other hand, the Rosh over here phrases it like this: "Dekimlan shaloya bilibo lekaimo." That we know for certain that what he's saying is not true. Shema tidor dvarim shu mitzter uboshalehim. Because she could take any type of nether here. She could take a nether that would embarrass him, that would cause him pain, and would be difficult for him. Veinu chafetz bikiyuman. And he has no wish that they are mikuyam. Vavikamo nether bitaut. And it's equivalent to being a nether bitaut. So what the Rosh says is the failure of the kiyum over here is not because the nether is not here. The issue of the kiyum is that we can't make a blanket statement of kiyum because it's just not true. And therefore, it's the equivalent of neder b'taut or kiyum b'taut because he can't make such a blanket kiyum. So Rashi says that the problem is simply the lack of neder. So you can't have a kiyum without a neder. On the other hand, the Rosh says, theoretically, you could have a kiyum without the neder. You could do this in advance. But the failure over here is not the fact that the neder doesn't exist, but rather the failure here is the fact that you can't be mikayim on a blanket basis up front. It's clear that that's not what you mean. Because we know we could come up with a nether that you would not be mikayim, and therefore your statement is false. It's basically a ta'ut, a mistake or false, and that's why we don't allow it to go through. On the other hand, harihein mufarin, if he says that any nether that you take will be mufar, Rabbi Eliezer Omer mufar, Rabbi Eliezer says you are successful at it, whereas the chachamim disagree and say that it does not work. And we'll see then in the Mishnah why the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Eliezer. V'ha'lo shama. Over here, he didn't hear about it. Clear that he's thinking about the future. He's saying that any nid that you take from now until I come back, those nidarim will be mufar. And Rabbi Eliezer says that they are mufarin. Hachanami damar l'chi shamano. Here the Gemara again says, the Chishamana, when he hears about them, then the Hafara will go into effect. V'lamali min hashto. So why does he have to make the statement before he leaves? The Chishama, leferla. When he hears about it, let him be made from the Nidarim at that time. Kasavar dilma machridna hayishato. He's afraid that at the time that she takes the nether and he hears about it, he'll be bogged down. He'll be involved in something else and he'll forget to do the Hafara. So he preempts it by saying the statement at a time when he's calm. And when things are not bothering him, or he's not distracted, so he makes the maisa for now, and he says it'll go effective when I hear about it, and therefore he doesn't have to worry about it in the future when he actually hears about it, as to whether he remembered to do the hafara, didn't remember to do the hafara. Now, the Ran points out over here that the proof of the Gemara here is not solely from Rabbi Eliezer, but it's also from the Chachamim's position. Because Rabbi Eliezer over there clearly believes that it's mufar, even though it was in the future, the neder. On the other hand, the Chachamim say that it doesn't work. But the Chachamim over there say it doesn't work. The only reason it doesn't work is because the nether wasn't taken yet. But the Chachamim agree that if she had already taken the nether, even though he had not heard about it, then that Hafarah would work when he hears about it in the future. So the Chachamim fundamentally agree that you're able to be made for the nether even though you haven't heard about it yet. And therefore, the Gemara's proof from that case in the Mishnah was from both Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Because both of them agree that you have the ability to set a hafarai in motion. It's just a question if the nether has to already have been taken or the nether is in the future. That's the only question between them. But at least in one of those scenarios, according to the Chachamim, where the nether was already taken, even though you don't know about it, you can take the hafarai now and have it go effective later on when you hear about it. So therefore, the proof from that Mishnah would have been both from the Chachamim, Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara again rejects it and says that it's structured in a manner where it only goes effective when he hears about it. Tashma. The next case. Omer l'apitropus. Kol nidarim shenodart ishti mikan va'ad shavo mimakom ploni. Any nether that my wife takes from mikan, from here, until I get to such and such a place. And the Ran says over here that he uses this lashon of mikan va'ad shavo mimakom ploni, not to set it based on time, but rather to set it based on location. Which is to say, from the time that I leave this location, go to such and such a location and return. So the effectiveness has to do with not time, but rather the nature of his travel. So instead of setting a time-based trigger, he sets a location-based trigger in order to basically incorporate what's about to happen, which is going to travel. He doesn't know the exact time or moment that he's going to leave, but he knows he's going to leave. And therefore he sets the tonight based on that. Hafer, you should nullify them. Hafer law, and he went ahead and was made for them. Yochel yeh mufarim, you would think that that works. Tamal Omar. Isha yikimenu, visha yiferenu. The Gemara says that that's not the case. Now, let's just understand the scenario. The scenario is here, he's going on a trip, and he appoints a proxy, someone to act on his behalf, that if he hears the wife's nidarim, he's going to be made for those nidarim on his behalf. So he says to the apitropos, listen, if my wife takes any nidarim, I want you to be made for them for me. And then the apitropos carries out his shlichut, and he does that. He's made for them. The Gemara says you would think that that would work. Tamal Omar, we have a pasuk that says it doesn't work over here because you have Isha Yikimenu, Aisha La. The husband will be Mikayim Nidarim. Isha Yiferenu. That the husband has the right to be made for the Nidarim. Divrei Rabbi Oshaya. So Rabbi Oshaya says it's a Gzeirat HaKatuv that only the husband has such a right to be made for the Nidarim, but a proxy can't do it. And that's because of the double usage of the word Isha. It could have said Isha Yikimenu V'Yiferenu. The fact that it repeats the word Isha twice tells you that it's solely the right of the Baal to do this, and he can't pass that right to any other party. Amar lo Rabbi Yonatan, Matzino b'chol haTorah kula, Shlucho shel Adam kimoto. That a proxy that is set up is the equivalent of the individual who sent him. So then, what do you see from this? That the apitropos should be able to be made for the nether. Now, Vafilu Rabbi Oshaya lo kamar elamishum gzerata katuvu. And even Rabbi Oshaya, who disagrees with Rabbi Yonatan, doesn't agree with the fundamental principle of Shlucho shel Adam kamoto. He just says there's a problem here of Isha Yikimenu, Isha Yiferenu, that there's a problem of gzerata katuv. Aval de kulei amo, everybody agrees fundamentally shucho shel adam kemoto, that a shliach is the equivalent of the sender or the appointer of the shliach. V'achalosh mele, he certainly didn't hear about the neder in this case. The assumption here is that the baal, the husband, didn't hear about it. Since the husband didn't hear about it, and yet he's still appointing a proxy, an apitropos, to go and be made for the neder. What you see here is the baal should have the right, or has the right, to be made for the neder, even though he's never heard the neder. Because shlucho shel adam kimoto. So now what are you going to say? The apitropos heard the neder. And shlucho shel adam kimoto. So now the apitropos heard the neder. And since he heard the neder, he can also be made for the neder on behalf of the baal. So here we have different answers to that problem. The Rosh over here says that that's not the case. He says, ushmiat apitropos eina kishmiat baal. The hearing of the apitropos is not the equivalent of the hearing of the baal. Ve'afel pisha so shliach lafer, even though he made him into a proxy to do the afarat nedarim for him. Demide de memela lo shayach minui shlichut. When it comes to something that happens memela, something that happens passively, there is no concept of shlichut. You can't make someone a shliach to do something that happens passively. Over here, the hearing is passive. You just have to be there, and you hear about it. And through passivity, you hear about it. And you can't appoint a shliach to do something that only requires passivity. And that's why the shlichut doesn't work for the shmiah. So based on that, the Gemara concludes that you don't need shmiah over here, because the apitropos can't do the shmiah for you. And that's because it's an act of passivity which generates the ability to be made for the neder. So that is the reason that the Rosh says that the apitropos can't do the shmiah from you. The Tzota Choshen quotes this Rosh and says that's the same reason you can't appoint a shliach to put on your tefillin. Because there are two parts to putting on tefillin. One is hanachat tefillin. That's the maisa, the action of putting on tefillin. That is something that's an active item that you can assign to someone else, or you can ask someone else to do for you. On the other hand, the tefillin need to be on you. They need to be on your body. You have to be a gavra that is wearing tefillin. That is a passive item. And a passive item, like the Rosh says over here, you can't create a proxy, you cannot create a shliach to do for you. So what the Tzot says is, you can have someone put on your tefillin on you, because that's the active part of it. So you can create a shliach to wrap your tefillin on you. What you can't do is create a shliach who will put on the tefillin on himself, because then he didn't accomplish. There's no such shlichut in that case for something that requires passivity, or meaning in this case that the tefillin be on your body. That's an act of passivity, and therefore you can't create a shliach for that. And that's what the Tzot HaKoshen quotes this Rosh as the source for that difference between the action of putting on the tefillin and the act of having tefillin on you, and why you can only create a shliach for one and not for the other. Now you could argue on the Rosh's premise here that listening or shmiah is a passive act. And that is because you could differentiate between what's called hazana and hakshava. The hazin means to hear something. Hakshiv means to not only hear, but understand what you're hearing. Hazana is the act of physically hearing something. Hakshava is not only the physical act of hearing something, but it's also the incorporation of the understanding of what you are hearing. And therefore, you could argue that the Rosh is right about the fact that the hazana, hearing words, is a simply a passive act that cannot be passed through shlichut. Then, hakshava, which is the taking of what you've heard, and then understanding it, and then understanding the implication of it, that might be something that requires more active participation. If that's the case, maybe you could argue that that is also subject to shlichut. Or you could say that still, even though it requires your active thought in order to do it, it's still within the realm of thought and not action. And that is still deemed to be something that's passive, because hearing and thinking are both in that passive realm. On the other hand, the Ran says over here that that's not the reason why the shlichut fails over here. But rather, he says over here, Teretzu betosva b'shem arav Rabbi Yosef Zal, Teleta, dim ita debay shmia, mi ika midi debao lo matzi meifar, Ushliach matzi mishave. Because over here, this is the same answer that we talked about by the Kohanim. The Kohanim have to be the shlichim of Hashem, because since Yisrael, since we can't perform the avodah on the korbanot, then certainly the Kohanim can't be our proxies and perform the avodah on the korbanot. Because if we can't do it, then they can't do it. So the same thing is true over here. if the Baal can't be made for the nether because he didn't hear about it, so the Apitropos, who's gaining his power and gaining all of his ability to execute from the Baal, he's only a proxy of the Baal. If the Baal himself can't do it, then the Shliach himself can't do it. So the Shmia of the Shliach can't suffice over here because the Shmia itself hasn't reached the Baal. And since the Baal can't do it, neither can the Shliach do it over here. And that's what the Ran says the failure over here is, that it's a failure in the Baal's ability to do Shlichut, and therefore the Shliach also can't do it over here. But in either case, there can't be Shlichut for the Shmia, whether it's for the reason of the Ran or the reason of the Rosh. And therefore, the conclusion of the Gemara is that you must not need Shmia in order for this to work, because, first of all, Rabbi Yonatan says it works, Shluchu Shel Adam Kemoto, and it does work over here. And number two is Rabbi Hoshi only says it doesn't work because of Gzeirat HaKatuv, but fundamentally agrees that you could create a Shliach over here to do the Hafara, and that must mean that there's no necessity for Shmia. Gemara says, Achanami Damar Lo L'chi Shamano. He did the same thing over here. He says, when I hear about it, then the nether will be mvutal, or it will be a farah will go into effect when I hear about it. He says, Agamar la chishamana meferla, that when I hear about it, it will be mufar. Amar asks the same question again, chishama leferla. So when the Baal hears about it, let him do the farah then. So who savar dilma matridna? He gives the same answer he gave before, that he might be bogged down, it might be too difficult at that time, and therefore he will forget to do the hafara. The Ran asks a very serious question over here. Why did he involve the Apitropos at all? Because the Apitropos makes no difference. Why do you have to tell the Apitropos basically to say what he would have said anyway? We saw before from the Baal HaTosafot, what the Chishamana means is that when I hear about it, then the Hafara will go effective. So now when the Apitropos does it on behalf of the husband, that's exactly what he's going to say to the woman. He's going to say, when your husband hears about it, then this hafara will go into effect. So all he's doing is something that the Baal himself could have done beforehand. So why did the Baal create a shaliach in order to say something that he himself could have done just as easily, also at an earlier moment in time? And the Gemara in Masechet Nazir, when it discusses this issue, leaves it as a tzarachiyun. Now, the Ran says over here, he says, V'li epshar the Baal chayish tilma bein on the meyadar b'farazu. So he says that, I can give you a reason why the husband doesn't want to do it, and he wants to give it over to the Apitropos. And that is because he has to set it in motion beforehand, because he wants to do it at a time when he's calm and when he's not bogged down with the travel and everything that's going to happen later on. So he does it ahead of time. If the Baal puts in motion his hafara from now, he is unable to retract it in the future. And that hafara goes into effect, and then once the hafara is in effect, he has no ability to retract it or to release it. On the other hand, if he appoints a proxy to do the hafara on his behalf and to basically say that when your husband hears about these nidarim, they will be mufarim, then the husband has a way to retract what he has put in motion, because the shliach, the apitropos, is only a proxy. And he can renege his granting of that right to the shliach, and then whatever the shliach said is meaningless. So the reason to do it through an apitropos and not himself, the Ran says, is because if he puts it into motion early, which is basically what he's going to do here, he's going to do this, say, a week before he goes to travel, and he's going to put it in motion. Now, it'll only be effective once he leaves town, because he'll say that. He'll say, it's only effective when I leave town, and he can do the equivalent of what he would have done with a proxy, which is that he'll set a time limit when it goes into effect. The problem is that once he puts it in motion a week earlier, then say in 5 days from then, he decides, you know what, I don't want to be made for the nidarim, I want to change my mind about it. He's unable to release or back out of what he already put into motion. Based on Rabbi Elazar's shita, lo matzi mehadar bei. He will not have the right to reverse that position. But on the other hand, if he appoints an apitropos, he appoints an executor to do it on his behalf, then koshaita v'shaita b'yadehu. It's always in his possession or in his right to renege on the shlichut, and therefore he can cancel the hafara. And that's why the Ran says he did it through an apitropos, even though he could simulate or do the same thing by himself. Okay, we're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph.